Thank you. So Revelation tonight, chapter 6, and we're going to take one more night to look at the fourth seal, and we're going to do it with some specificity as we take a look at some of the trends that we're seeing in our own day. And you don't have to be a news junkie like me to know the word SARS, to know the potentially devastating effect that SARS is having on some countries, especially China. We'll talk about that a little bit tonight. But you know what we want to talk about tonight? We want to see the faithfulness of God, and we want to see that, remember now, 2,000 years ago, almost 2,000 years ago, the Apostle John received this revelation from the Lord Jesus Christ, and he told John exactly how things were going to be in the last days and the things that were going to take place. And one of the things that he said, you know, I mean, not so long ago would have seemed kind of foolish, because if we look together at Revelation chapter 6 and verse 7, we see that the Word of God says that when the fourth seal was opened, he broke the fourth seal, and I heard the voice of the fourth living creature, or the Zoa, saying, "Come." And I looked, and behold, an ashen horse, which we said is more of a greenish color, and he who sat upon it had the name Death, and Hades was following with him. And Hades, we said, is the grave. Thank you for handing those out, Mike. Hades was following with him. And authority was given to them over one-fourth of the earth to kill with the sword and with famine. Notice it now. To kill with the sword, that's war, and with famine, that's the third seal that was opened. So war was the sword. That's the second seal. All of these come out of the Antichrist coming with the first seal being opened. So first seal is open. Antichrist comes forth. And then you have war. And then you have famine. And now we have disease. These three things. And all of them are tied together. Now look at this. One-fourth of the earth's population is wiped out by sword. That's the second seal. Famine, that's the third seal, and with pestilence, and by the wild beasts of the earth. Very interesting, because that, if any phrase in this passage that sounds archaic, that's the one. Because I've got this idea of a wild beast coming out of the woods and, you know, like lying in wait, a wild boar or something, or a leopard, and darting out and killing someone and then running back. You know, that kind of idea. But it's very interesting, we're going to see tonight, that a lot of the diseases that are running rampant on the planet today, and I'm going to tell you something, it's a pretty frightening situation. Many of the diseases that are running rampant today have their origin in the beasts of the field. And do you know that just last month there was another Ebola outbreak, this time in the Congo? Africa is being ravaged by disease. It's unbelievable. The World Health Organization says that Africa is in a state of near disaster, epidemic disaster. There are some places in the sub-Sahara regions of Africa where there are no people in the entire village over the age of 20 because of AIDS. No people over the age of 20 left in the village because of AIDS. Now, here in the West, with our education and with our information superhighway and with, you know, 24-hour cable news and all of the stuff that we have here, information spreads very quickly. It's not like that over there. And it's not like that, especially when the government has a vested interest in hiding what's really happening, as China did with SARS and AIDS before it. See, China knows, the communist government of China knows, that if they come out and say, we have an epidemic of AIDS in our country that is of amazing biblical proportions, that what will happen is investors whose money they count upon will stop investing in China because of fear. You know how volatile the market is. All they have to do is hear a rumor and zzz, all of a sudden the Dow goes down. Everything goes down and people stop investing in these countries. Well, you know as well as I do, if you've been following this SARS thing, which, by the way, they're still trying to figure out what it is. I was studying it all day today, and there are some ideas that it may have to do with a certain virus. They call it a coronavirus, which, if you look at it under a microscope, it looks like it has a little crown. So they call it a coronavirus. But yet the new studies that have just been published this week are saying some of the cases of SARS that they found don't have this virus present, so they don't even know if it's connected to this virus. The bottom line is they don't know. Now, people are dying in Canada all the time. You're hearing about it on the news. In America, we've been able to contain it. But you've got to understand something. America is a lousy way to judge the condition of the world. You know why? Because we're the richest nation in the world. We have the most financial resources available. We're by far the most educated nation in the world. And so you know what? As a result, we have advantages that other countries don't have. But when you have, you know, this little sheet that I gave you tonight that we talked about last time, where you see the population declining and declining and declining. Did anybody not get one of those? Okay, put your hand up. Were there any left, Mike? Okay, just a couple right here in the back in the corners. Thank you. You see we showed you this last time, but you see the population declining, and we just did this as a little exercise so that you could see the entire populations of these nations being wiped out simply by the breaking of the fourth seal, or the opening of the fourth seals together, which is probably the best way to look at it, famine, war, and pestilence. But as we see this, you kind of step back a little bit and you say, wow, think about it. Mexico, Venezuela, Brazil, Chile, Peru, Indonesia, South Africa, Albania, Luxembourg, the United States, Switzerland, Austria, Norway, Netherlands, Ireland, Mexico, France, Canada, Russia, the Czech Republic, Greece, Germany, Italy, the United Kingdom, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Spain, Portugal, and the Ukraine, entirely wiped out. Their entire population's gone as a result of this judgment, the fourth seal, or the four seals together. And this is only the fourth of 21. This is only the fourth judgment of 21 tribulational judgments that take place in a 3.5-year period. This is going to be a tough time. But we look at it in the Bible and we say, you know, the Bible's so antiquated, isn't it? I mean, you know, you think about it, 2,000 years ago, how relevant could it possibly be? I mean, after all, they didn't have the wisdom back then to know that by the year 2000, we'll have all but licked disease altogether. With all of the education and all of the money and all of the research and everything that we have done as human beings, not only us, but the French doctors and the English doctors and the German doctors and the Austrian doctors all over the world, all this research that's been done, you would think that disease would be a thing of the past. But God said it's not going to be that way. In fact, to the very last gasping breaths of human history, we will still be fighting disease. And it will be of a proportion which will be pandemic. I want to read to you the introduction to a book called In the Wake of the Great Plague. And I apologize. In fact, I think I showed it to you last time, but I apologize because I forgot to write the author's name on the top. I can show you that later. But the book is called, it's 2002 scholarship. It's a recent book about the Black Plague that devastated the population of Europe. This is how he introduces the book. In the sixth month of the new millennium and the new century, the American Medical Association held a conference on infectious diseases. Pronouncements by scientists and heads of medical organizations at the conference were scary in tone. Infectious disease was the leading cause of death worldwide and the third leading cause in the United States, it was stressed. The situation could soon become much worse. As the world becomes more of a global village, said one expert, now I want you to listen to this very carefully because this is very insightful, and we're going to see it tonight when we look at the devastating epidemic disaster that's taking place right now in China, most of which is being covered up. As the world becomes more of a global village, says one expert, infectious disease could by natural transmission become more threatening in the United States. If there's one thing we do in the United States because of money is travel. Most Americans have been out of the country. Most Americans like to travel. They like to, if they can, they try to take a vacation every now and then, leave the country. Here, monitoring is lax because of the mistaken belief that the threat of infectious disease has almost been wiped out by antibiotics. Bioterrorism presented a further and much greater
possibility of terrible outbreaks of pandemic in the United States. The New York Times recently reported that, quote, a speaker at the meeting warned that the healthcare system of the United States was not prepared for a bioterrorist attack in which hundreds or thousands of people might flood hospitals needing treatment for diseases, anthrax, plague, or smallpox, which most doctors in this country have never even seen. Because these things, like smallpox, are considered a thing of the past. Not so. We'll see tonight. In the same week, the American Medical Association Conference, and its Cassandra-like speeches, the NBC Nightly News featured a brief segment showing American biochemists helping their Russian counterparts clean up and close down a large germ warfare factory. The TV correspondent remarked that the Russian plant had been capable of producing far more than the minimum required for effective biochemical warfare. He did not pursue the obvious questions of whether the Russians had been exporting the plant's surpluses to Iraq, or if this was the only one of several Russian germ warfare factories, and whether others may still be operating. The New York Times report was tucked away on page 15 of its national edition, and the NBC News devoted a total of 4 minutes of its broadcast to the Russian disease factory to indicate that the problem of infectious disease and its pandemic threat to American well-being is still being regarded as a marginal matter. By the time the next president of the United States finishes his term, it could be the most visible problem facing American society, similar to the biomedical crisis of the late medieval Europe, England in particular. And then just something about the Great Plague, which in history is the most important loss of life percentage-wise by plague that we've ever seen. He says the Black Death of 1348 and 1349 was the greatest biomedical disaster in European and possibly in world history. Its significance was immediately perceived by a wise Arab historian, Ibn Khaldun, writing a few years later. He wrote, quote, civilization both is east and west and was visited by a destructive plague which devastated nations and caused populations to vanish. It swallowed up many good things of civilization and wiped them out of the entire inhabited world, close quote. A contemporary Florentine writer referred to it as the exterminating of humanity. A third at least of Western Europe's population died in what contemporaries called the pestilence. The term Black Death was not invented until after the year 1800. This meant that somewhere around 20 million people died of pestilence between 1347 and 1350. The so-called Spanish influenza epidemic of 1918 killed possibly 50 million worldwide, but the mortality rate, in proportion to the total population, was obviously relatively small compared to the impact of the Black Death, where between 30 and 50% of Europe's entire population vanished. Now, that's the way he begins his thesis on the Black Death. I was shocked studying this subject again over the last week. I taught about infectious diseases at a prophecy conference one time. And this was many years ago now. I don't remember what year it was, but it was probably 1996, I would think, something like this. It was a while ago. And I was shocked then at the things that I learned. I'm not a doctor. I have no medical training whatsoever. All I know is what I read, and I always make sure that the sources that I read, to the best of my ability, are current and that they're reputed, well-respected sources. And I'll be quoting those sources for you tonight. But the amazing thing about it is that just today, just looking today at news headlines across the world, virtually every newspaper that I looked at online had in its front page a story about infectious disease ravaging the earth. And I think that the author of this book is correct. In America, if anywhere, we have a tendency to really marginalize the impact of infectious disease. I mean, you never really think it's going to happen to you, right? You hear about Ebola and you think, good grief, thank God that's in Africa and not here. That's never going to make it here. But what the author pointed out is very wise. America is becoming more and more globalized. The world is becoming more and more a global community. We're traveling to places we never would have dreamed of traveling before. I would venture to say that in this room, just in this room, virtually every continent on the earth, except for Antarctica, has probably been visited by somebody in this room. I visited five of them. And when you think about the way that travel, how easy travel is today and how easy it is to pick something up and to bring it back through Kennedy Airport or bring it back through Logan Airport and unsuspectingly make other people sick and begin a chain reaction of illness that the contemporary medical field can't even understand, it becomes a little frightening. And you have to take a step back and you kind of have to say, well, why hasn't it happened so far? And I think the answer is because God has had his hand on us. But there's a day coming. And the Bible says that the day is coming soon when God is going to remove his hand. And this is going to be one of the great plagues, one of the great judgments that fall upon the unbelieving world. And what I want to show you tonight is the faithfulness of God, that in 2003, what God said is going to happen makes perfect sense in our understanding of the news. In 1972, the U.S. Surgeon General said, and I am quoting from Time magazine, quote, "The nation is ready to close the book on infectious disease." The Surgeon General of the United States, 1972. At a time when disease should be a thing of the past, the world finds itself dealing with diseases that were even unimaginable 20 years ago. Consider the following. Medical personnel is better trained than at any other time in human history. Technology is more advanced than it has ever been. Like never before, we have an understanding of the importance of proper sanitation and cleanliness. Health codes regulate our food, regulate our sewage, regulate our homes. We would think that there's no disease left. There's nothing left for disease to cling on to. However, while technology should have made disease a thing of the past, listen to some of these headlines of cover stories now of major magazines, okay? And all these are within the last 5 or 6 years. Popular Science, cover story, "Why We Are Losing the Fight Against Deadly Diseases." Time magazine, cover story, "The Revenge of the Killer Microbes." Newsweek, cover story, "Antibiotics, the End of Miracle Drugs." Major feature film, "Outbreak." Has anybody seen the film with Dustin Hoffman? If you've seen that film, boy, I'll tell you, it makes you want to run and get one of those things that you wear, you know, like this. There's one scene where this virus, and as a matter of fact, at the beginning of that film, and as I said last week, I think, it's one of the few films that my wife and I, we don't go to the movie theater very often. And one night we decided we were going to go out, and I think Dustin Hoffman's a fantastic actor ever since I saw the Rain Man movie. And so we saw he was in this movie, and we went to see it. And I'm going to tell you something. It scared me half to death. Because it shows the Center for Disease Control sends representatives to Africa. It starts off, they send representatives to Africa because there's been an outbreak of Ebola. By the way, there was one last month. 60-something people died. I'll read it to you tonight. I just found it in the infectious news, infectious disease news, the IDN, which is a well-respected medical reporting, you know, source. It starts off that all of these people are dying. They have no idea what's going on, and now they're trying to isolate all of these people and try to find out what exactly is happening. And then, so as the movie progresses, they teach you how the Center for Disease Control works and how they're tracking these diseases that if they don't get a handle on quickly, I forget what they called it because I haven't seen it in years, but it was like, you know, like code blue or something like that, when you know something is really, this is a disease that's on the verge of going out of control. And there are a number of these diseases that are in this kind of stage right now, where we're kind of our medical professionals, the people who work for the Center for Disease Control and WHO, the World Health Organization, are monitoring very carefully to see what's going to happen next. Meanwhile, trying to figure it out. You remember the gay plague? They called it the gay plague, AIDS, right? At first they called it the gay plague, and then they realized it was an immune deficiency disease. But how many people died while we were just trying to figure out what is it? What is this thing all about? And then because there was a moral issue attached to it, the government at the time did not want to put the money into research that probably could have saved a lot of lives at that time. And then the pendulum went all the way to the other end, where more money was being spent on that than cancer research and research for other things after there was an understanding of what... It's a very, very difficult situation. And in America, we've seen death by AIDS go way down, the percentage rate go way down. In 1 year alone, it dipped 25%. I think from 1997 to 1998, in 1 year, it dipped 25% in America. But all over the rest of the world, it's skyrocketing. Because especially countries like China. Now, you see this sheet that I gave you over here? See this sheet that I gave you? A lot of countries, right? I could have put China in just a few countries. China's 1.2 billion alone. So you can imagine how many people live in China. And you know what? The government has a vested interest in making sure that the rest of the world doesn't think that they have an epidemic on their hands. Well, it bit him in the foot this time with the SARS virus because people are going back to places like Canada, to the United States. They're coming from, they're coming from China, and now all of a sudden we want some answers. To this day, China refuses to give us data about SARS patients in military hospitals so that we can get some kind of idea of how many people have already died from this. It took them more than 2 weeks to even report it, so we were already at a disadvantage of trying to come up with a cure. Now, when you think of a billion people being wiped out through plague, 1.5 billion people in this first judgment, being wiped out through war and plague and starvation, and you think of what could happen in a country just like China alone if plague like this begins to run wild, it really boggles the mind. Sub-Sahara right now is in an emergency disaster situation. They're fighting for their very existence. As I said, some villages are ghost towns. Well, outbreak. In the movie, it explained how at one point the virus becomes airborne. That's scary. That means that when you breathe it, somebody else can breathe it. Now, they think this, they're not sure, and I'll tell you, you want to be confused? Read the data about SARS. Nobody knows anything. They're all guessing, but nobody knows anything. They think that it latches itself on to droplets of some kind of secretion, like saliva, or so if you cough and some saliva goes onto your hand, or a droplet of moisture goes onto your hand, and somebody else touches your hand and then touches their eyes, nose, or mouth, they can become infected. And apparently they believe that it can sit there for a while on droplets. So people who care for SARS patients are very, very much at risk. But the bottom line is they don't know what's going on. There was a made-for-TV movie, Virus, that had high ratings a few years back. And two best-selling nonfiction books, The Hot Zone, which I read, and The Coming Plague, which I did not, will scare the life out of you. The hot zone is about areas in the world that are literal hot zones for infectious disease. Allison Jacobson of the University of Cape Town's Department of Microbiology wrote an outstanding paper entitled Emerging and Reemerging Viruses, an essay. You can get this online. You can just type in her name, Allison Jacobson, University of Cape Town. And I took a large part of this. I edited it down so that we'd be able to get it into the message. But let me read you a little bit of this. She says, and I'm quoting here: within the last decade, there has been an ever increasing awareness of the Darwinian struggle with which the human species is engaged. Microbial and viral predators abound. In no less than before, and still present a consistent threat to our individual survival as well as to the success of the population at large. Following decades of general complacency in the antibiotic era, a startling turning point has been reached, spurred in large part by the global ravages of the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV. One of the simplest of viral constructs, which still evades cure or even a true understanding. The last 2 years have been accented by several striking episodes of disease reemergence, such as the multi-drug resistance tuberculosis. This is tuberculosis that you can give. They use multi-drugs to try to counter, and it literally does nothing. The drugs laugh at it. And those here in the medical profession, you correct me if I'm wrong, this is my understanding, that years and years and years of antibiotic use have literally, and not finishing those antibiotics, have literally developed immunities to the antibiotics. So now they call these things the super viruses. I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's what they call them, because you know why? They shoot them up with antibiotic and the things burp and laugh. Come on, what else do you have? Told you should have finished your medicine. You should have finished the whole thing. Well, she goes on to say that the last 2 years have been accented by several striking episodes of disease reemergence, such as multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, acute coccal infections, and rodent-borne pneumatic hantavirus in the United States, food and waterborne outbreaks of salmonella infections, cholera, and illnesses caused by Shigella-like coli. Against these newer threats is a perpetual backdrop of multiplicity of infections, which cycle throughout their ecological niches and which are encountering opportunities in our modern world to spread with frightening vigor. Currently, we're experiencing the epidemic potential of HIV, but the next epidemic of human disease may be entirely different. Leading the list of urgent threats to health are new and emerging infections. It must be recognized that the health of the developed world's people is inextricably linked to the health of people in other nations. Infectious diseases can and do disseminate rapidly around the globe, and the global surveillance for emerging infections is vital to public health. In other words, you know what? We can't sit complacently by and watch the population of Africa be decimated, because it's a matter of time before those plagues, those viruses, are disseminated throughout the world in this new globalism. Everybody with me? She goes on to say, while it is vital for us to recognize and promote this awareness, we too have an integral role to play in surveillance and basic research. There seems to be two stages in public health crisis. First is, I don't believe you. And the second is, why didn't you tell me? Everyone tends to think in very short terms. Although officials need to recognize and respond to the critical disease of the year, it is also necessary to maintain the infrastructure needed to identify emerging diseases as well as to develop effective ways for combating them. The problem can be made more difficult when resources are set aside for spotlighted problems without ensuring that the less glamorous infrastructure needs to continue to be met. Joshua Lederberg has commented that viruses are humanity's only real competitors for domination of the planet, serving as both parasites and genetic elements in their hosts. Not only do they have considerable plasticity, enabling them to evolve in new directions, but their genetic and metabolic entanglements with cells uniquely positions them to meditate subtle, cumulative evolutionary changes in their host as well. In contrast, they are also able to decimate entire populations. Now tonight, let me just talk to you about a couple of things. This is something that we really had to pick and choose, because there is such a huge list of infectious diseases that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, sees as real, like, mega problems at this point, that you just have to kind of pick and choose which ones you're going to talk about. I'll talk about the most famous ones. First of all, Ebola. Ebola virus burst from obscurity with spectacular outbreaks of severe hemorrhagic fever. It was first associated with an outbreak of 318 cases and case fatality rate of 90% in Zaire, and caused 150 deaths among 250 cases in the Sudan. Smaller outbreaks continue to appear periodically, particularly in the East, Central, and Southern Africa. In 1989, the hemorrhagic disease was... Am I saying that right? Hemorrhagic, thank you. The hemorrhagic disease was imported by monkeys into the United States from the Philippines. Now, I thought this was very interesting because we're going to see with almost every one of these diseases we're going to talk about tonight, animals are involved. And with the new outbreak of Ebola, they also have all these dead gorillas laying around, and they're thinking that that possibly the disease came from these dead gorillas. So I thought it was kind of interesting when the Bible says in Revelation chapter 6 in verse 8 in the B part that one-fourth of the, and it was given to them over one-fourth of the earth to kill with sword and famine and with pestilence and by the wild beasts of the earth. I just thought it was interesting to think about. In 1989, the hemorrhagic disease was imported by monkeys into the United States from the Philippines. Strains of Ebola virus were isolated from these monkeys. Epidemics have resulted from person-to-person transmission. The mode of primary infection and natural ecology of these viruses is unknown. Association with bats has been implicated directly in at least two episodes when individuals entered the same bat-filled cave in eastern Kenya. Ebola infections in Sudan in 1976 and 1979 occurred when workers of a cotton factory containing thousands of bats under the roof were bitten. This study of antibody in bats failed to detect evidence of the infection, and no virus was isolated from bat tissue. In other words, we don't know. The index case in 1976 was never identified, but this large outbreak resulted in 280 deaths of 318 infections. That's a pretty high rate. That means that 38 lived out of 318. Now, if you use that as a microcosm and extrapolate that to a macrocosm in a huge pandemic kind of situation, you have quite a death rate. It goes on to say, the incubation period for needle-transmitted Ebola viruses is 5 to 7 days, and that from person-to-person transmission is 6 to 12 days. The virus spreads through the blood and is replicated in many organs. The histopathologic change is focal necrosis, which is a nice way of saying death. What's the Greek word for death? Nekros, right? So the result of this is focal necrosis, which is a nice way of saying they die. In these organs, including the liver, lymphatic organs, kidneys, ovaries, and testes. The resulting manifestations are bleeding, the loss of intravascular volume, bleeding, shock, and the acute respiratory disorder seen in fatal cases. Patients die of intractable shock. Those with severe illnesses often sustain high fevers and are delirious, combative, and difficult to control. No specific antiviral therapy presently exists against Ebola virus, nor does any interferon have any effect. So the idea is they basically don't know what's going on. Okay, so we say, look, now I got this. This is like this report here is from the from WHO, the World Health Organization. This is 1997. That's 1,000 years ago. 1997. 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 6 years ago. What are we doing with that kind of stuff? March 2003. That's last month. Infectious disease news. Quote, this is the article. I'll read it to you. The headline, Ebola confirmed in Congo outbreak. 80 cases reported with 64 deaths. Geneva. Laboratory tests have confirmed that Ebola is the cause of an outbreak of hemorrhagic fever in the Republic of Congo. As of late last month, 80 cases have been reported, including 64 deaths. Most cases, 74 people with 59 deaths, are in the district of Calais.
The government of the Republic of Congo in Brazzaville has requested assistance from the World Health Organization. Ebola hemorrhagic fever, EHF, is one of the most virulent viral diseases. By the way, has there ever been a cure for a virus? Has any virus ever been cured? Never. Never. We have never cured one virus. We have a very low virus cure rate. Zero. It goes on to say that it's one of the most virulent form of viral diseases known to humankind, causing death in 50 to 90% of all clinically ill cases. But this is last month, folks. I want to remind you, this is last month, this article, okay? It goes on to say that the Ebola virus is transmitted by direct contact with blood, bodily fluids, and tissues of infected patients. In the past outbreaks, health workers have become sick after contact with bodily fluids of patients that they were treating. Several experts in clinical case management, epidemiology, and social mobilization from the World Health Organization Global Alert and Response Network have either already arrived in the country or are on their way to the infected area trying to control this outbreak. You know what this means? This means that what happened last month is the first scene in outbreak. Go get the movie. Go rent it. And the first scene is what happened again last month. So that's modern scholarship. Influenza. We all know about influenza, right? We still get flu shots. Well, influenza was an epidemic that in the 1950 pandemic, more than half a million people throughout the world died. Let me talk about some information about STDs. First of all, gonorrhea, curable, okay? Somebody gets gonorrhea, go to the doctor, penicillin, is it? My doctors and nurses here, penicillin, I think. It's outgrowing the cure? Okay. I was aware that I always thought that it was curable. Gonorrhea was curable. Syphilis, not curable, but controllable. You get syphilis, you have to live with it. But it is controllable. Herpes, controllable, but with reoccurring manifestations, sores that come up periodically over and over again. AIDS has a long incubation period, and we all know about the unbelievable number of deaths from AIDS. It's a disaster. It is a disaster. Its long incubation period, the HIV positive stage, often results in the infection of many other persons before the disease is identified. It is spread by one of the strongest drives in the human race, sex. And this has all but guaranteed its geometric spread. For the first time in history, a person with this near 100% fatal disease is politically protected. This is a huge change. Because in the past, when a disease like this was identified with someone, a communicable disease of this kind of magnitude, isolation, quarantine took place. Not now, because this is a moral issue. It's a freedom issue. It's a different issue. Politically protected. While those with the new TB strain are often quarantined, AIDS cannot even be identified to employers as having the disease. Not even in the food industry because of privacy protection. In some areas of the Sub-Sahara where males are known to have had an average of 25 sexual partners per year, there are now entire villages without any adult population at all, only grandparents and very young children. This from the Data Lounge. Infectious rates and mortality. By 1994, AIDS had become the leading cause of death among Americans between the ages of 25 and 44. 400,000 people died in the United States. Let me read that again. 400,000 people in the United States had developed AIDS since 1991. This is only up to 94 now, from 81 to 94. Over 250,000 of them have died. That means a quarter of a million people in America alone. Because of advances made in treating opportunistic diseases, AIDS mortality rates in the industrialized countries, especially the United States, Canada, and Northern Europe, began to fall rapidly. AIDS mortality in the United States dropped 26% between 1995 and 96. I had said, I think, 97 and 98, but 95 and 96. Meanwhile, while we can kind of be lulled to sleep by this idea, well, the mortality rate is dropping rapidly, yeah, in this country, but not in other countries. While this is true of this country, listen to what they go on to say. Meanwhile, the number of people living with AIDS continues to steadily climb. AIDS mortality rates in the developing world, however, third world, second world countries, are catastrophic. The vast majority of people with AIDS in these countries have no access to any antiretroviral disease drugs. This is tough reading for a guy like me. Okay, I don't really usually read medical stuff, but let me try this again. The vast majority of people with AIDS in these countries have no access to any antiretroviral drugs at all. Many lack the most rudimentary medical services. In 1998, UNAIDS, UNAIDS, reported that the worldwide HIV epidemic was far worse than had been previously believed. Updated surveillance techniques suggested that 30 million people are living with AIDS, HIV/AIDS, and that 16,000 new infections are occurring daily. 16,000 daily worldwide. Worldwide, one in every 100 adults ages 15 to 49 is believed to be infected with HIV. Worldwide. Now, the American population is a drop in the bucket of the worldwide population. We saw that. If we saw that this week, last week. 200 and some odd thousand, it's on your sheet. 200 and some odd million people we have in this country, right? Against billions, almost more than 6 billion people. 6.3 is the number that we're working with. So it's a drop in the bucket. But worldwide, one out of 100 adults aged 15 to 49 are believed to be infected with HIV. Hardest hit countries are in sub-Saharan Africa. More than 25% of the population is in Zimbabwe. Now, I want you to think about this. More than 25% of the entire population of Zimbabwe is HIV positive. One out of every four is HIV positive. The UN estimates that 2.3 million people have died in AIDS in 1997 alone. 2.3 million. And a 50%... indicated a 50% increase over the year before, and that in many parts of the world, the full impact of the epidemic is only beginning. In South Africa, for example, South Africa alone, this is from the World Health Organization, authorities estimate that 500,000 persons are carrying the HIV virus, and that number doubles every 13 months. Did you hear that? 500,000 people carrying HIV, and that the number of people carrying HIV doubles every 13 months. If current trends continue, an estimate of 16 million people, 16 million South Africans between the ages of 14 and 50 could be HIV positive in the next 5 years. Only 20 million South Africans voted in the last election. Just to put that number into perspective. So they feel that in the next 4 to 5 years, 16 million people in South Africa could be infected with HIV. And that's only 4,000 people less than the number of 4 million people less than the number of people that voted in the entire election. According to the International Intelligence Briefing, When 20% of the sexually active population becomes HIV positive, the social structure will collapse. And this is exactly what has already happened in Zambia, Uganda, and Zaire. The World Health Organization reports that as of 1996, 29,400,000 were already HIV positive. 8,400,000 of those cases had developed full-blown AIDS, and 6.4 million deaths had already occurred because of AIDS. The epicenter has shifted to Asia with its enormous populations. And health officials estimate that India, the world's second largest population, that in India, the world's second largest population, 50 million may be infected by the year 2002. So this was 2000, statistic that I have here. Now, let me talk just a few moments about SARS. And then I want to put this together and I want to try to make some sense of this for us with an article that was the front. I want to read you a part of an article that was the front page of the Asia Times today. You can go home and you can download the whole article yourself. It's the Asia Times online, an article by Christopher Horton about what is happening in China right now as a result of HIV, AIDS, and SARS. All right, listen to this. Here's what SARS is all about. This is what we know, but from the Center of Disease Control, as of April 22nd, 2003. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, is a respiratory illness that has recently been reported in Asia, North America, and Europe. As of April 20th, about 198 suspect cases of SARS and 38 probable cases of SARS have been reported in the United States. In general, SARS begins with a fever greater than 100.4. Other symptoms include a headache, overall feeling of discomfort, and body aches, and some people also experience mild respiratory symptoms. After 2 to 7 days, SARS patients may develop a dry cough and have trouble breathing. They believe, as I said, that it spreads by these droplets. There is no test available for it, and the CDC is still looking into the best way to handle it, whether they should make the jump into isolation and quarantine. Now, today's Toronto Star, today, April 23rd is today? Okay. Today's Toronto Star, let me read it to you. This is called Mystery Deepens Over SARS Key by Tanya Talaga, the medical reporter for the Toronto Star. Quote, Americans traveling to Toronto should bring their own thermometers. Americans traveling to Toronto should bring their own thermometers, household disinfectants, surgical masks, and other protective devices in order to protect themselves from catching SARS, U.S. health authorities advised yesterday. The travel warning came as the mystery of what causes SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, deepened, and another victim died yesterday. Next week, at an international SARS meeting to be hosted by the Health Canada organization, scientists from the World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control, and various Canadian institutions from the Pan-American Health Organization will try to gain a better perspective on the disease. Last night, the provincial health ministry announced a 64-year-old man died of a probable case of SARS. He's the 15th victim in Ontario, where there are now 261 cases of suspect SARS. The science of SARS took an ominous turn yesterday when one of the Health Canada's leading scientists doubted that a new species of coronavirus is solely to blame for SARS. They really thought that this coronavirus, with this thing that looks like it has a little crown under a microscope, might be the cause of the virus. But he said that he doubts that it is solely to blame for the SARS outbreak. While it was announced early last week that the genetic code of the SARS virus had been cracked by a British Columbia team, Dr. Frank Plummer said his microbiology lab in Winnipeg has found that the coronavirus is only present in about 40% of the samples taken from probable SARS patients in Toronto. The mystery is further complicated because in Toronto, SARS cases are, quote, all linked, and they should have the same thing. You'd expect to find the same evidence of this coronavirus, but it's just not there. As the provincial health officials struggled to get on top of the Toronto outbreak, some help was imported from south of the border. Yesterday, a team of Atlanta-based Centers for Disease Control sent three experts to Toronto to help them stop the spread of the disease in hospital settings. Despite stringent infection control practices, Toronto healthcare workers are still getting sick with SARS, and the Center for Disease Control will help Ontario officials decide if biohazard suits should be used when dealing with SARS patients, Young was told said at a news conference. Currently, the practice when treating a SARS patient is to wear double gloves, double gown, a face shield, and a mask. This is a big step, and we want to think about it very hard because it's very hard to work in these biohazard suits. Okay. Now, I have 10 minutes left, okay? I want to read you this article that I found today. I know I'm doing a lot of reading tonight, but you know what? I usually don't use my notes, but I couldn't remember all this. I really did need to. I really did need to read it. This was phenomenal, okay? Because I think this may give us an idea into the kind of global mindset that we need to have in truly understanding what's happening here. This is from the Asia Times Online. You can go home. You can do a Google search for Asia Times Online. The name of the article is SARS and AIDS, What the People Don't Know, by Christopher Horton, reporting from Bangkok. I'm quoting. Last October, in the eastern Chinese city of Hangzhou, United Nations Secretary Kofi Annan visited Xinjiang University to receive an honorary doctorate from the school. When he spoke at the presentation of his degree, he had a dire warning for the students, the faculty, and all of China. China was on the verge of a massive epidemic, Annan said. An immediate action must be taken in order to stem the spread of this deadly virus. But he was not talking about SARS, which was first identified in the Guangdong province the following month. He was talking about the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, which causes AIDS. Quote, there is no time to lose if China is to prevent a massive further spread of HIV and AIDS, Annan said. China is facing a decisive moment. Annan may have been spoiling the celebratory atmosphere for the gathering of 500 students who came to honor him, but he did not relent in his message. He said, for the truth is that today China stands on the brink of an explosive AIDS epidemic, he said. Central China's Henan province is the specter that haunts the new leadership of Beijing. Henan became the focus of global attention in 2001 when overseas media reported an HIV epidemic in the rural province of more than 95 million. Let me say that number again. 95 million in the Henan province of China alone. 95 million. Henan's HIV epidemic, unlike SARS, was in essence spread by local officials of the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, who were making heaps of cash from illegal blood banks in the late 1980s and 1990s. They were making so much money from these unregulated and unsanitary clinics that they dubbed blood banks Henan's, quote, third industry. In poor rural areas in Henan, locals were encouraged to sell their plasma to numerous operations throughout the province. These are very, very poor people, and they're being encouraged to sell their blood. Unfortunately, employees at the blood banks either didn't know or didn't care much about spreading HIV, as evidenced by the repeated use of individual needles on donor after donor after donor. The inevitable result of such actions was an HIV explosion among people who could not afford health care, even if they were lucky enough to have access to it. The head of Chinese AIDS Foundation, Zeng Yi, said last year that local authorities became aware of the Henan problem back in 1995. This is unbelievable. Blood banks were closed, but locals were not told that they might be carrying the virus. Now Henan has more than 100... quote-unquote, AIDS villages, as they're called in China. The HIV infection rates for these bleak towns range from 60 to 84%. Economics were the impetus for silencing from the local officials regarding the rapid spread of HIV. Quote, they're afraid that the economy will suffer if the situation is revealed.
Maybe investors will no longer be interested in that region, and they wish to assume no responsibility. This is their way of thinking, said Zhang. Such intense but initially localized spread of HIV might not have been a problem for Beijing had it not occurred in a had it occurred in a more remote area, such as the sparsely populated Western China. And if the Chinese government had been honest and open in dealing with AIDS. Unfortunately, where this took place, in Zhengzhou, a city of 6 million people, it also happens to be the main hub for China's extensive railway system. In other words, all of the trains, the central transportation hub of China is this city. China's major north-south highway also passes through Henan. Throughout all of China, and particularly in the poorer places of Henan, poor, uneducated women choose prostitution as their last resort for earning a living. Because of years of silence regarding the transmission of HIV, most of China's prostitutes never use condoms, which were predominantly viewed by the Chinese only as being useful in preventing pregnancy. Many Chinese think that even to this day. They don't understand that condom use is a form of preventing STDs. The Chinese word for condom is a word that literally means avoid pregnancy glove. And it can be seen as contributing to this large-scale ignorance. But the blame should rest squarely on the Communist Chinese Party. The few HIV information campaigns in China have usually painted a picture that as long as one is not a homosexual, an intravenous drug user, or a prostitute, one is not at risk for HIV. Today, many Chinese believe that if someone feels good and looks fine, they cannot possibly have HIV, because the only pictures they ever see of people with HIV/AIDS are images of patients in very advanced stages of AIDS that are designed to shock the viewer. Last year, in a Chinese poll of university students, can you imagine this? Listen to this. In a Chinese poll of university students, far fewer than half of those polled knew how HIV was transmitted. Half of university students did not know how HIV was transmitted. Most people, see what I mean when I say that you can't judge what's happening in the world by what's happening in America? Most of the people in Henan's AIDS villages had not even heard the word AIDS until the past couple of years. It is this countrywide lack of information that makes nationwide spread of HIV all too likely. Histories of both HIV and SARS in China have one striking and shared characteristic. You know what the shared characteristic that HIV and SARS have in China? Here's what it is. Beijing's knee-jerk suppression of all relevant information out of fear of damaging China's economic growth. It's all about money. They don't want to tell people about their AIDS problem. They don't want 95 million in one province alone. They don't want to tell people about the SARS epidemic. You know why? Because they want people to continue to invest. In the face of AIDS and now SARS, the Chinese government has spared no effort to suppress information regarding either illness. In both cases, the Chinese population is paying a heavy price. The Chinese government said that by 2003, there would be 1 million cases of HIV on the mainland, roughly the same number of infections as in the United States. Baloney. That's what they're admitting. What? Now listen carefully. While 1 million infections in a population of 1.3 billion is only 0.08% of the population, it is still a disturbingly large number of people in a country whose government, even after Anand's visit, has made next to no efforts to inform its people about the virus. In other words, if there's no education, that amount of people, I lost the number here, are going to spread the disease exponentially. Last summer, the United Nations report warned that if the Chinese government did not radically change its HIV policy, the number would soon reach 10 million by the year 2010. HIV/AIDS, luckily for Beijing, has been a relatively easy thing to cover up, at least domestically. It appears that SARS, however, is about to change all of that very quickly. As of Wednesday, Henan province, again, a poor province of this was a typo here, but is referred to by the Chinese state media as one of the provinces hit hardest by SARS. Despite having only officially reported two confirmed cases as of Wednesday. It's amazing, huh? How people in the Western world are catching it, bringing it over there, but they only had two people that came down with it. Henan is next to the Shaanxi province, which, as Asia Times Online has reported on location, has been suffering from its own SARS outbreak for weeks already. Just as China's links to the world have fueled the international spread of SARS, China's massive web of domestic air, rail, bus, and boat links, combined with the world's largest population, ensure that SARS will soon be in every province, city, town, soon, if it isn't there already. Making things much worse is the recent cancellation of school in Beijing's 1.7 million students, which has prompted a massive train and bus exodus out of the SARS-ravaged capital by students and migrant workers. These students and workers literally come from every part of China, and they will be riding packed trains, buses out of the capital to every corner of the country. A typical Chinese train holds more than 600 passengers. Restrooms are less than sanitary. The floors are usually covered with urine. Toilets are non-flushing holes that usually have residual fecal matter. And as the rapid spread of SARS among more than 300 residents of the Amoy Gardens residential complex in Hong Kong suggests, it could be spread through the air or by environment. Chinese trains typically have three passenger classes: hard seat, hard sleeper, and soft sleeper. Hard seat cars are, in essence, train-filled cars with packed with as many seats as possible, in which seatless ticket holders sometimes sleep in aisles or even under seats. You can imagine what the situation is like over there. And you know what? It's virtually unreported because of the economy. Now, I've said a lot of things tonight, and let me just say this. I think when we put it all in the balance, we probably have to admit that we're a little more fragile than we thought we were. I think maybe we have to think that, hey, maybe we're not as tough as we thought we were. You know, we think that we've licked everything. God is in control. And God said, in the last days, you're still going to be worrying about diseases. And in the last days, one of the judgments will be epidemic. Next time we'll move on to the fifth seal. Let's bow our heads and pray. Well, Lord, we thank you that as we study these things, we have the confidence of knowing that no weapon formed against us will prosper. And we also know, Lord, that you sovereignly hold human history in your hand. Father, we pray that we would not have presumptuous sin, pride that would cause us to think that we have control of our own destiny. But Lord, as we see these things unfolding, as we see governments willing to jeopardize the lives of millions upon millions of people just for the sake of money, we look to the skies and we consider that our redemption is near. Thank you, Father, that your word is being proven true over and over and over again. As our Lord Jesus Christ said, I say these things to you before they take place, so that after they do, you will believe. We affirm with you, Lord, as you said, that not one word of your precious promise will ever fall to the ground unfulfilled.